Good day, listeners of KGVM Bozeman. This is Steve Kirchhoff coming at you along with Jeff Milchen, my comrade in whatever it is that we're doing here, investigating, interrogating, and advocating for community in the city of Bozeman. Today, Jeff and I are going to be visited by Paul Janicki. Paul Janicki is a longtime architect who works in the city of Evanston, Illinois, which maybe qualifies as an edge city of the greater Chicago area. So Paul will be here because our topic today has to do with the built environment, has to deal with the sense of place, a topic that we've touched on before in this very show. But today, I'd like to steer our conversation regarding the sense of place around a couple of thoughts. First, how can we think about development even in our fast-growing circumstance here in Bozeman, in which we are growing at a rate probably higher than 4%, at least at 4%. And I think that it's a given that this growth rate is disconcerting to a lot of people's sense of place, their sense of pace, the pace of life, and their sense of place also. It's potentially disorienting because the city keeps growing by leaps and bounds, as everyone who has been living here for any length of time knows, making strangeness sort of a partner to one's feelings about being in Bozeman and living in Bozeman day to day. I think it's hard to avoid a sense of estrangement from the new Bozeman that's being built in all four directions of our city. And this estrangement might just be, if I'm going to be honest, it could be a curmudgeonly grudge against growth. But I don't think so, because I think that it has roots in a realistic appraisal of our sense of place that's being replaced or challenged or maybe even uprooted by a new and wholly different sense of place as we see the build-outs happening all around us. A sense of place that is new, that is challenging to the old, a sense of place that maybe not respectful to the old, a sense of place that we're seeing around us that is designed to maximize market niche, to bring to pass basically a sale, to create market rate growth for the benefit of those who are producing it on the landscape, basically to scrape rent off of the land. And in other words, the care for our place seems to be less visible now than the care for other things like rents and profits, the going rate of the market, which keeps pushing dwelling rates higher and higher and higher. So I want to talk about sense of place, and I want to talk about it from the point of view of what's being built, what's being added to our landscape, who's being served, who's not being served, what can citizens do who are concerned about it, how can citizens stand up and be a part of the process rather than becoming curmudgeons and standing at the sidelines. So that is basically where I want to take this conversation, and I hope that it'll be a productive one for all three of us. So I'd like to address my first question to Paul, our visitor from the Chicagoland. Paul, first of all, I'm sorry about the Chicago Bears. But secondly, what I would like to ask you is, you've been a frequent visitor to Bozeman. You and I are good personal friends, and you've been here probably half a dozen times. And also, as a practicing architect, you have a very acute sense of your surrounding and more than just an intuitive sense of what's being built, but also a very practical sense of how all that happens and how it comes to be. So I'm looking to you to help shed some light on what locals have been observing for some time. And that is, how would you describe the historical sense of place that you have discovered in Bozeman from your own observations over the years of coming here? What would you say our historical sense of place is? Just looking at the historic inventory of buildings and neighborhoods. And so what would you say it is that we start with? To you, what is the sense of place and how is it connected to the built environment?
Well, if I can start first by talking about growth for just a minute. Growth in and of itself, I don't believe is a negative, you know. I think that unchecked growth and growth with no oversight could be a very terrible thing. And it looks that there's some of that happening in Bozeman, like is happening really in any American sort of urban and semi-urban areas. As far as what Bozeman, to me, you know, my first impression of Bozeman was sort of like a lot of Western cities that, or towns, we'll call them, that grew up, you know, during the late, you know, 19th century, early 20th century. I mean, there was a commonality of materials, and actually that probably had a lot to do with availability. You know, you only had a certain kind of stone that could be quarried, you know, within 100 miles, let's say, or even less. Or you had a certain kind of clay that you could make a brick out of. And I think that lent a sort of consistent material palette, which I think is something that kind of jumps out at me when I'm in Bozeman, that the original buildings, well, I say the original buildings, but the buildings that were built first earlier in the commercial area of downtown especially, and in the residential area, you know, they seem to hew to a certain palette of materials and a certain height and a certain kind of window fenestration and a storefront alignment. And there's just a real kind of a consistent sort of, if you call it urbanism, that took place there, which is great. I mean, it's a very long avenue downtown, mm-hmm. but, and then of course, you know, they would use wood for most of the housing stock, you know, near downtown. So I think that commonality of materials really, really helped in the early days sort of make it feel like it had a sense of place. You know, and the unique stone or brick to that place also helps cement it sort of in, you know, in the viewer's eye. You know, now we have such a large palette of materials that architects can choose from that it's sort of gotten out of hand. Is that kind of what you wanted to talk about, Steve?
Yeah, but when you say it's gotten out of hand, what's out of hand exactly?
It's almost like the palette that architects are choosing from is now so gigantic that it becomes sort of a very confusing and not very cohesive urban experience. And you really see it in every area in America that's like that. And I don't want to necessarily point to the modern era and kind of just dress down modernists and the modern movement after 1920, but that sort of is what happened to a lot of towns that architects stopped feeling like they needed to sort of obey a certain set of, I wouldn't call them rules, but established mores of what architecture was and should be as a family of buildings, mm-hmm. and about a context. Mm-hmm. And that I'm going to build a building next to that building, but I'm going to respect that building and the buildings around me because they're already a certain scale and material. It's like Paris. Paris kept building in the same material, in the same scale, same fenestration, same storefronts, and it worked pretty well there. And I think that's what's happened to a lot of American towns like Bozeman size, where it just starts, and actually a lot of cities in America too, where the material palette has gotten so widely varied that nobody's really paying attention to it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does.
So, Paul, I'm curious, do you have examples you would point to, especially if you're aware of any in the Rocky Mountain states, where there is even, you know, today with that broad range of palette that you described available, where there still is a consistent style or sense of place amongst the building going on? And if so, how did that come to be? What kind of measures were put in place to help encourage that?
One doesn't jump off the page at me. I imagine Boulder might be a place where you could point to as some of that as being rather successful. But unfortunately, it's certainly the exception to the rule. It's just development, unfortunately, has gone. I think what happened is in the days of yore, you didn't have developers, for instance, that were coming from New Mexico to build a house in a building in Bozeman, or from New York or L.A. You had local people who wanted to just develop real estate, and they lived in that town, and the architects lived in that town, and they had a certain feeling or a sense of responsibility to build something that was commensurate with what else was there and of the same quality and the same craftsmanship and the same, if you will, again, that the character that you're talking about, Steve, that that's how that all came about. It's when people started to, like corporations, but, you know, other entities came to develop as purely a business proposition that unless a town had already something in place that was a very sort of, I don't want to use the word restrictive, but had really defined guidelines of what development would be, no matter what. These are our rules, and that's how you do it. But I don't see that has happened in many places, and that's sort of unfortunate. But it's a very slippery slope. A lot of people don't want that kind of oversight, and they don't want design review, and they don't want binding design review, and they feel that it's going to drive developers away or out. And my point would be, Bozeman's a really amazingly unique, wonderful place, and people are coming there because it is a unique, wonderful place. And I think Bozeman should be standing up and going, you know what? We're a really cool place, and we'll call the shots here. And if you don't want to develop the way we want you to develop, well, then go someplace else. Because there's a guy right behind you that wants to develop, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, those are great comments and a lot of food for thought. And I have two ideas in my mind competing at the same time. One is that you've identified the fact that architects in the modern and contemporary setting have been liberated from a kind of localism in terms of where they get materials. Now materials are readily available, and they come in a dizzying array of different kinds of things that you can clad a building with to make it work. And so architects have been freed from their old devotion to these old forms and old materials simply because of technology, because of progress, because things have changed in the industry. At the same time, though, you were saying that there's a political connection to maintaining a sense of place, that the city fathers and mothers and places that have been able to retain their character have been adamant about doing so. So do you weigh those two, and there might be more vectors than that, but if there are two influencing factors that are resulting in what we're seeing being built in Bozeman today in 2019, are those roughly equal? The freedom from a localism of materials and also a sort of a slackening of political commitment to a sense of place? Or how do you weigh those two?
That's tough. I will talk about a moment about materials, though, in general. When you talk about the availability of materials, and we're talking about carbon footprint, which is so important, and to ship metal panels, for instance, or a certain kind of glass curtain wall system that's fabricated in upstate New York and send it on a diesel truck and have it shipped, you know, 2,000 miles away, when you could have the materials that have always been available locally in your own backyard. To me, that's a much greener way of thinking about architecture.
Indeed, but I don't even know that anyone manufactures brick locally. I mean, some of it is because of this incredible change in what is considered to be a usable material, and where it gets manufactured seemed irrelevant for so long that I think that a lot of the local homegrown brick manufacturers, cement mixers, or whatever they might be, steel elaborators, maybe they don't even exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. What about stone that was used in Bozeman for some of the buildings downtown? Is that steel being mined?
That's a great question. I don't know where the granite comes from. I don't even know that anyone uses hard rock granite anymore. It's usually some kind of like a dust that gets turned into like a cement brick. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can't answer that question. But I'm just wondering if with the explosion of new materials that local industries have basically gone fallow.
That's too bad.
You know?
I wasn't aware of that.
Well, I don't really know. I'm sort of speculating, but I'm interested. Have you observed places where there is this political commitment on the part of the city councils to maintain a kind of local sense of place?
Yeah, there are actually a lot of places in the United States that have what you're describing, and they're mostly, you know, they're basically historic districts. You know, that's the way, that's the mechanism people have used to kind of save neighborhoods, save downtowns, is to do an overlay district that is a place where you can't just build what you want. You need to kind of propose something that would be then vetted through some sort of a historic commission, or, and then from there to the city council, mm-hmm. and then where you have open forums for citizens to come and sort of express their like or dislike for something. That whole process of getting the community involved, I think, is really important. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Bozeman has historic districts or how that works there.
Yeah, we do. We have numerous, I think 7. I'm not sure if that's the right number. But we have a conservation overlay district, and then within that we have 7 different unique identified historic districts.
Is there one downtown?
Yes.
And so how are we getting all the buildings you showed me on that website?
Because the downtown historic district is very strict when it comes to what is developed on Main Street itself. But if you remember, one block to the north and one block to the south, they're opposite going one-way streets. And on those streets, you don't have the same restrictions applying to height, massing, and materials. Main Street's very restrictive because it was basically a 2-to-4-story format that historically the city was built upon. And so when we adopted the downtown historic district, the idea was to keep the downtown in its future development looking very much in its height and massing, at least, and well, any materials, keep it in conformance with what had come before. But you go one block to the north, one block to the south, but then not much farther. You can only go maybe 2 blocks both directions, and there's this big bubble of land which is actually zoned for downtown commercial, but is actually used right now primarily, more than 80% of it, probably more than that even, for residential purposes. And so in that little sort of inner tube that surrounds the downtown core, you have the abutting interests of neighborhood organizations keeping their neighborhood fabric intact versus developers seeing that this ground is actually zoned for more intensive use and wanting to go vertical. And so there's this abrupt edge, and we've had some controversial projects that have been located right on that edge, where not even an alley separates a 5-story building from its 2-story brick bungalow neighbor. And that has been a flashpoint for Bozeman. And we had a building that was debated for 1.5 to 2 years before it was finally approved. There were some minor changes made by the developer, sort of acquiescing to the public outcry against too much building, too little parking, etc. But that's just one of several critical problems that we're facing with this 4% growth in the city of Bozeman.
Mm-hmm. I think I saw that building. Was it under construction?
Yeah, it still is under construction. It's going to be done probably in the next 6 months or so. It's called the Black and Olive Building. In fact, where we are right now, we're a half a block away from that building.
Well, I mean, it sounds to me as like the zoning does make a whole lot of sense, where you just have this one long corridor that is protected in a very strict way, and literally 1 foot on the other side of that is something that is much less restrictive.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's sort of not really well thought out urbanism, because it's just becomes like an amusement park along that one strip, and everything else then falls away from any kind of serious sort of oversight. But it's all part of the same fabric. Mm-hmm. It's right there. It's just a 20 steps away, and you're in this other district. I don't understand how they can be so separate. To me, that's sort of like a problem right there. And it sounds as though there's not any mechanism for sort of forcing developers to sort of gradually decrease scale as they get closer to residential districts, or is there?
No, there's a boundary line on the zone map. And if you're inside that boundary and you're developing on a commercial platform and you are given the permission to go up 60 feet, that's what you could do. And the developer scaled it back somewhat in response to public outcry. But as I said, it was a bloody battle that lasted for a long time. And as a result of that bloody battle, many in the neighborhoods that are directly adjacent to this new building, and also others who see that their time is coming and they live near the downtown core, a lot of those people have become, I would say, a little bit jaundiced, somewhat cynical about process, not especially interested in ever returning to it, the city council chambers to make any testimony. And so I think that's another form of loss that this breakneck growth creates, is disillusioned citizens who are unlikely to like take upon themselves the duty of being a good sort of citizen again and go into that fray. They just don't see any benefit in it.
I think and I can't speak for the city and for the political machine, how it works there, but I mean, it seems to me as though things, if you're growing that fast and decisions are being made on the fly and things are like running sort of out of control, then I think the process has to slow down. And the city has to sort of make a decision that we're not going to approve projects in such a quick fashion, and we're not going to be pressured by special interests, whoever, to do that. And I think also, I really believe that there are enough citizens concerned about this that they should really be fighting to change the zoning on those two strips that are adjacent to Main Street, because they're really critical to me, it sounds like. And no developer, if you give developer a site, and I've worked with developers and I know, and I'm not not throwing them under the bus, but if you tell a developer, here's this big rectangle of land, you can build six stories on it, they're going to build six stories on it, and they're going to try to get seven or eight, because that's just the way they make their money, you know. And here's the thing, the people that own that property, you know, each of those people that own these different pieces of property up and down on both of those districts that see what's happening, and they see these buildings go up, and they're like, it's time for me to cash in, and I'm going to sell my property, and then the price for the property goes up because they see that the city is allowing people to build lot line to lot line, six stories high, and not have to do any sort of special, you know, scaling down to the neighborhood, and it's payday, and, you know, it's human nature. They're going to want to get the most they can for their land, and then that becomes sort of just a runaway train because each piece of property gets more and more expensive as it goes down the line, and each developer is asking for more and more and more, and the city, unless they're super strong and they have an ordinance that can really control it, then you have really what happens to most towns like this. You just get this runaway development with very little rhyme or reason to sort of scale, roof lines, fenestration, storefront development, parking. It just, you know, goes on and on.
It's distressing.
I'm a huge advocate of extremely strong zoning and design appearance review in places like Boston.
Well, I appreciate that. It's interesting how contrary to fact everything that you're saying is, because here's another aspect of the breakneck rate of growth, is that prices are escalating to such an extent that I was just looking at a real estate website. As of October 3rd, the median price of a single family residence in Bozeman is $482,000. For a townhome, $354,000. For a condo, $305,000. Now, the median household income, that is generally two people combined, is $46,000, meaning that you can afford somewhere between $255,000 to $260,000if you're not going to exceed what is recommended in paying for rent or mortgage. So what we have are people who can afford $260,000, but the average price is $480,000 for homes, I'm talking. But it's not that much better for condos and townhomes. But what's being built are the townhomes and the condos, and they're being built at prices that are exceeding by like 50% what people can afford. And here's the deal. You said that the city council should not be pressured to make fast decisions, should not move as quickly as they are moving, and should be more deliberative. But in fact, the opposite is the pressure that's being applied. We're in an election year. A couple of candidates for the city commission, or that's what we call it here, not council, have been talking about streamlining the process, taking regulations out of the way, because if we want to keep up with price point, if we want to push the price point down, we have to increase the supply, and the only way we can do that is by building faster. You know, if you follow the simplistic notion that it's all a question of supply and demand. And in fact, people would say to your comment that being more restrictive is going to retain your sense of place, what they're going to say to you in response is, and it's also going to make it only affordable for the 1%. Right now, we're affordable for the 20%. And you want to winnow it down to the 1%. I mean, I'm just being rhetorical here, but
that is an argument I'm sure that they would make, people like that would make. And I think it's very disingenuous. I don't understand why. It seems like an emotional lever that groups like that will use to sort of scare people off and to make people quiet about, you know, what's happening. Because I think that, and I'm not an economist, but that to me just sounds like a bunch of hooey. That I think that, you know, and then within the zoning district, you could have affordable housing. There are all sorts of tools in your toolbox from a zoning perspective that you can use to sort of check that kind of growth and to give affordable housing to people who need to work in town and need to be close and have their families in town. So I really don't buy that. I believe it is just rhetoric.
So, Steve, you focused the conversation around Bozeman specifically and even more tightly the downtown, but the bulk of new housing development of all kinds is not downtown, but spread out, you know, especially between the triangle of Bozeman, Four Corners, and Belgrade, where the bulk of new building is happening. How much of a role, you know, does the community character and the issues we've been talking about playing there? I mean, are there many communities that are focusing on that citywide or countywide? Expanding the conversation just beyond a few designated districts that are the focus maybe of visitors and tourism. And does that matter? You know, does it matter what the development looks like in the outlying areas where most people live?
Are you asking Paul or me or both?
Kind of just a provocation to anyone who wants to answer.
Well,
go ahead, Steve.
I'll take that because I live here and it's easier for me than it is for Paul. But thank you, Paul, for all your comments. It's distressing how speaking on a general level about how frustrating it is to control development, and you're doing that on a somewhat general level, how accurate that is in describing Bozeman. I want us to be different. I want our community to stand up for itself. I want to retain the sense of place, but that takes a dedicated cadre of citizens who can apply the proper amount of pressure, not NIMBY pressure, but the proper kind of pressure to get the desired outcomes that fulfill the needs for affordable housing while not sacrificing community character. And our community is growing in leaps and bounds. It's sprawling out in all four directions. It's going on every arterial, every state-controlled route. Wherever it's easiest for people to purchase raw ground and get the backhoes going, there's no rhyme or reason to it. Every day you open the newspaper, you hear about, this morning, for example, I opened the newspaper. There's a 305-unit project that's actually closer to the core of town than most. But there's a 305-unit project that's supposedly going to satisfy the demands for studio and one bedrooms and going to hold a price point, although there's no sense of any guarantee for that. There's no genuine commitment on the part of the developer. It's a very sketchy story. There are no details forthcoming. But that's the kind of thing that there's a 300-unit development here. There's a brand new downtown coming in just south of the university. Paul, are you okay? Are you drowning in a bathtub?
Sorry, I'm feeding my dog.
Well, that's what makes this local radio.
But obviously, I wasn't.
Yeah. But here's the point. Here's the point that I'm trying to make. I'm very long-winded. But what I'm trying to get down to is this. It's happening in all four directions. It's happening at an intensity in all four directions. So you see a 150,000 square foot building coming in with 18,000 square feet of commercial. You see 300,000 square feet of new condo and loft stuff coming in with 15,000 square feet of commercial. You have just by the university what a city commissioner touted as the next new Bozeman downtown coming in. And yet this is all being greeted with open arms without the kind of scrutinizing, sort of like security checking for the sake of current residents that I would like my elected official to do. Does it make sense to develop another downtown just south of the university? Why is this the path that we're taking? What was the deliberative process that resulted in this becoming a good idea? How does that fit into our growth pattern for the next 10 years, 20 years, and 50 years? I mean, to me, it's a cart with no wheels, but it's a cart that somehow miraculously is going at breakneck speed.
Yeah, I noticed that that was happening, and you're kind of splitting the city in two, in a way, right? With the university and that little village and the things that they're building over there.
Well, there are a lot of different clusters of development around the city. I wouldn't say that, you know, the north side of Bozeman and the Northeast has its own cluster of commercial development and its own identity. There supposedly is going to be more going on in what they're calling the Midtown area around 7th Ave. So there, you know, ideally there will be multiple kind of nodes of commercial development so that people are able to fulfill a large percentage of their day-to-day commercial needs, you know, whether that's groceries, hardware, dining, within walking distance. We're a long way from realizing that, but that's certainly the goal you'll hear espoused by many city commission members, yeah, and planning board members.
Yeah, you will definitely hear them saying that. That is the talk that they're going to talk, but it's unrealistic from my point of view. The Bozeman Real Estate Group has identified downtown Bozeman. So there are four places: downtown Bozeman, the northeast side, Midtown, and this place called Ferguson Farm, which is west of town. These are supposedly going to be nodes, but they're separated by miles and miles of space. And the only way you can navigate that space is to get onto a major state-controlled route or a major arterial. We're talking five-lane facilities with speed limits of 45 to 50 miles per hour. So, I mean, it's not smart growth. It's not new urbanism. It's not compact development. Supposedly, it's all going to come. Maybe it will. Maybe in some future day, it will happen. But the way it is now, people are basically consigned to their cars. And they have to drive 15 to 20 minutes to get groceries. They have to drive at least that, if not more, to get to work. There are two major employers here, Montana State University and the hospital. And then a host of others, obviously. But those are the two main ones. There's more than 3,000 people go to work at those facilities each day. And our new developments just get farther flung and farther flung and more on a car-oriented sort of format that we thought we had gotten rid of 20 years ago. So anyway, that's a little frustrating. But to answer your question, Jeff, yeah, I do think that's important to make sure that the new developments have some sense of place and that they have some sort of defining character. And that would start at the subdivision level, at the street layout level, the alleyway level where you're putting your utilities. And it just seems to me that in our current marketplace, the political actors have basically become custodians who essentially give a thumbs up, occasionally a thumbs down, but you never hear them talking substantively about future growth, what makes sense, where, how, and why. That's my frustration with the moment.
Well, I think, Steve, if you think about Evanston for a minute, Evanston is sort of a parallel in a way to Bozeman on some levels. You have like one major downtown. That's the one where everyone considers downtown.
Right.
And then you have a bunch of single family houses on single lots surrounding the downtown.
Yes.
Right? Very similar to Bozeman.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are these satellite portions of other downtowns that are smaller, but yet really lively.
Yeah.
And they're served by their neighborhoods of other single family houses on single lots, and then some apartment buildings, some multiple multifamily housing. But that's the way, in a way, it works really well because people do walk on foot and on bikes and do their shopping in these little downtown. I think I recall, you know, no one listening to the show knows Evanston, Illinois, but there's two other sections that are just small places that have a few restaurants. They might have a little grocery store, convenience stores, you know, music stores, bars, but it works because it keeps people from all trying to congregate to the main downtown on a regular basis. They might have to come downtown to go to a doctor or to go to the movies, but they can sort of stay in their own neighborhood and use their own 2 feet and their bikes and baby strollers to kind of go about their everyday life, which is very green, I think, and very sort of a thing. So I don't know what the development around the university is like, so I'm loath to comment on it.
Yeah.
But you know, it has to be, the thing is, it just has to be planned. If it's just happening willy-nilly, where people are just buying property and developing it the way they think they should be developing it, then yeah, you're going to have craziness, you know, Southern California, you know, sort of nonsensical urban planning.
So, Paul, since you've been in this industry your entire adult life, what is your observation about how citizens or how communities have been able to muster the political will to get this, to get the good stuff done?
Well, it really does, you know, it's a really grassroots thing. I mean, people have to be very passionate about where they live. You know, in some towns, that just doesn't happen. There's a town north of us called Lake Forest, which is sort of a famous enclave and a very wealthy community. And maybe I shouldn't be pointing that one out, but they have the most restrictive sort of design review and design approval of any place in this region, and which makes it unusual because it's full of really wealthy Republicans. And typically, wealthy Republicans are the last people in the world to say, yes, please tell me how I can develop my property and what I can and can't do. It's usually the exact opposite end of the spectrum. But they've decided they love where they live so much and love the way it looks and works now, they want to preserve it. And you could call that NIMBYism, I guess. But I still think that in order to get Bozeman or a town like Bozeman to make changes, you just, someone needs to really, really be working hard to sort of organize. And I don't know if that person exists or maybe it's you, Steve.
Oh no, it's actually Jeff Milchen, and I wanted to ask Jeff this question because you've been an advocate your whole life for locally owned businesses, right? And you've been
nationwide, not specific to the Gallatin Valley,
right? But it's true that this is your specialty in a way, right? Is helping people to try to empower themselves and to create communities in which locally owned businesses can thrive and can flourish, strengthening communities in that particular way. And so it would seem to me that for that to happen, people would have to become their own best advocates. And there would have to be a lot of empowerment on the part of business owners in terms of becoming conscious of what they are, what they represent, how important it is to have locally owned businesses. Do you have anything that you can share in this realm that could be useful and shed light on to the Bozeman citizens' desire for a built environment that reflects what they came here for, what this sense of place is all about? How could you help to empower citizens to make a difference?
Well, certainly, I mean, there needs to be an actual, you know, organizational presence to be able to make an impact on these issues. And right now, That's not to say there's not such a thing in Bozeman, but there is. If you asked a dozen people off the street, you know, who's a local group that would be a place to get involved in making an impact on these issues, you'd probably get some that had no idea and very different answers from others. I guess part of tying into the issues we've been talking about here, Bozeman's population now is reaching kind of a critical mass of around the 50,000 mark, where it's going to start attracting a lot more interest from some of the national chains, talking about local business opportunities, especially in the downtown area. Certainly, Four Corners, Belgrade, Bozeman already have a plethora of the national chains out in the strip developments, but the downtown, the core areas up to this point have been relatively kept as the domain of independent, locally owned businesses, with a few notable exceptions. And so that's one of the things that, you know, people I would say should be really paying attention to. And if that is a priority for them, to keep opportunities for local entrepreneurs, being proactive in terms of talking about policy is certainly one of the ways that needs to be addressed. And additionally, right now we've been talking a lot again about the downtowns, but when you look out on North 7th Ave in Bozeman, Huffine Lane through Bozeman to Four Corners, 19th Avenue, what you're seeing overwhelmingly is very huge scale, 20, 30 plus acre developments of single story big box development that offers very little opportunity for any kind of local entrepreneurs. By their nature, they're attracting the people who already know this is the chain where I go to get this type of food or this type of merchandise. And additionally, it's imposing huge infrastructure costs on the community that put that much more pressure on the downtown areas of our communities that are shouldering the bulk of the tax burden. Well, while these low value developments, acres of parking surrounded by single story developments, are chewing up a large percentage of public services but contributing very little to the tax base. So, sorry for that bit of a rant, but
that was a beautiful rant. So, I guess though, Jeff, what I'm driving at is, I don't want to see citizens become completely cynical, mm-hmm. or showing up at city council meetings basically to criticize the city council rather than to encourage them to make right decisions. It once they lose their belief, it's really hard to get people back into the room in anything but an adversarial role. Instead of encouraging, they become merely critical. And they also, as we've seen on the national level, people become susceptible to sort of demagoguery and to authoritarian appeals once they become disenchanted with the notion that they have any impact whatsoever on their environment.
And so, I'll say from my perspective on a couple of projects that I worked on, Evanston, what you're saying, Steve, sort of rings true, where a project that is actually, I think, a pretty good project, and actually whose intentions are pretty fair, will have detractors, like any project has detractors. But the detractors are the only people that come and shout. And the other people and the other citizens in town who you talk to after the fact, well, why didn't that development happen? It sounded like it was a really lovely, great idea. And you say, because nobody came and supported it. It was only all the negative people in town who don't like anything all came down and shouted down, and it had an effect. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that a couple of really wonderful things that could have happened in this town, and a benefactor that lived in this town has now fled and decided never to come back and help again. And I've been actually working on a couple of these projects as an architect and seen it firsthand, and it's very discouraging. And I think Steve's got a good point. How do you get people involved who will spend their time to advocate for the good things and sort of positive things and rational discussion about projects like this, and not just the people who are just have nothing to do with their lives but come out and complain about every single project that's being built.
Yeah, and that becomes a question of engagement and how important to a particular citizen or to all citizens is retaining, let's say for the sake of our conversation, a sense of place, who we are, what we look like, how fast we drive in our cars, how well do we know our neighbors, that whole, all those elements that together make up the community fabric. I'm just really hoping that Bozeman can retain that kind of positive sense of engagement, positive engagement on the part of citizens.
Yeah, I mean, the big challenge is in just about any other kind of politics, it seems, is how do you inspire people to become informed and engaged proactively?
Mm-hmm.
Because like most communities in Gallatin County, it's usually when there is a project that's objectionable that people come and speak out. But to use the example, Steve's been referencing the Black Olive. Of course, there was a huge outcry against that and a lot of engagement. But once that started down the road to construction, nobody is paying attention to the fact that there are two more adjacent lots that exactly the same thing could happen to. People have just walked away. If anything different is going to happen there, we would need some kind of proactive discussion like now about how could, whether it's the city buying back the development rights to go up from two stories to five stories or some other, creative thinking about how to actually have a healthy transition from the mid-rise buildings to the residential neighborhood nearby. I haven't personally heard a word of discussion about that since the Black Olive started discussion. It's just one example.
Well, I was president of a group in Evanston that was really just citizen fueled called the Preservation League of Evanston, and had been around for many, many years, but it's basically just a grassroots group of people who care about historic architecture and want to preserve, the fabric of the city. And there's yet another group called the Southeast Evanston Association, which is sort of the same thing, and they have a board, and they put out newsletters, they put together community meetings and have speakers come, and they'll be open-minded enough to have speakers come from both sides of an issue. A developer, for instance, and, maybe a critic of the development. So they can have a real discussion about, what are we going to do here, and what's the right thing to do here, and what do the citizens want here? We need, it seems to me, and I don't know if Bozeman has these, so maybe I'm talking out of my hat, but it seems to me that Bozeman needs groups like that are populated with professionals that know something about development, that know something about land use planning, architecture, law, and who care about preserving the character and the future development of Bozeman. I can't believe there aren't a lot of people there, just from the people I've met there, that aren't passionate about all those things. I think it just needs to be put in some sort of an umbrella, an organization, and that organization then has power. Because they have the power then to be in the newspaper, and they have the power to be at meetings and speak for a larger group of people.
Yeah.
And that has impact.
Yes. Yes, I agree with you. And we do have over a dozen neighborhood associations officially recognized by the city of Bozeman. And the city of Bozeman has a position, a full-time position called the neighborhood coordinator, whose job is supposedly to make outreach to those associations and to lend the city's ear. It's supposed to be pressure from the bottom up rather than the city informing the neighborhood associations. And that's what the convenience of an association is from the eyes of the city. No. It's supposed to go the other way. It's supposed to be the city is receptive. The city is there to listen, to be informed, to understand the concerns of neighborhoods. And I think that those associations can be powerful. When I was serving on the city commission, in fact, I had to gavel down the Northeast Neighborhood Associations called NENA. They came to protest a particular, I don't know what it was, a noise ordinance or something that we were contemplating. And they were raucous. They were passionate. They were foul-mouthed. and they were making their presence felt to such a degree that I started slamming the gavel down. I said, this meeting is an adjournment until I say so. I didn't know what to say. I was a rookie. And then we, you know, I cleared the room, and then we all took a breather and came back 15 minutes later in a decidedly more positive environment, but still passionate. But I think that was because that the NINA group had really been galvanized around like tireless leadership. There were a few individuals who really took the mantle and ran, and just they were dedicated to the whole prospect that this should happen. And I don't know that that's, I think that was proactive. And I think more often than not, the associations are reactive. They get galvanized around things that could threaten them rather than advocating for what they want their future to look like.
Well, you know, I'll say I think that the Neighborhoods program has been, you know, very active in getting that kind of engagement from the local neighborhood groups. We should actually have a program with with the folks involved in that. But you know, that the issues covered, you know, often are more kind of day-to-day affairs. I think that the city certainly has been, you know, proactive in getting that engagement from the community, the neighborhood groups, and helping facilitate that. It just hasn't come to that. It's been somewhat separate from, I think, the kind of thing that you're talking about, Steve, of the advocacy in terms of lobbying the city on, you know, larger scale citywide issues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which I guess in my mind's eye would be, excuse me, the ideal, mm-hmm. that a neighborhood, excuse me, that a neighborhood association, of course, is there to defend turf and to advocate for what happens within its boundaries, but is also cognizant of what's going on citywide, and is unafraid of partaking in issues that are not strictly related to what's happening within the neighborhood's boundaries. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's what makes towns better too, is that we take each other's business seriously, and not that we interfere with each other, but that we care, right? And advocating on the part of someone else for someone else's needs would be to me a natural extension of a neighborhood association. That what you want to do for yourself, arguably, you'd also want to help others do for themselves. And so that's how I see building a more robust sort of citizenship base overall, you know. But I don't know, it's hard times. It's hard times to get people interested, I would say. Anyway.
I think on the other hand, too, I mean, you talked about a reactive thing, and I think that's very telling. Because by the time a group finds out a development is being planned, the property is probably already, you know, in half bought. You know, the developer has already hired an architect and a real estate attorney, and they're already planning on this thing, and they're about to foist it upon the neighborhood, and the neighborhood is like totally like blindsided, and now they're reactive, as opposed to starting from the ground up. And I think this really is important: is getting these community groups interested and engaged around the zoning for these areas that you guys are so concerned about. Because without a different zoning scenario, you're going to run up against the same problem block after block after block after block.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no way around it, because a developer is going to buy a piece of property and he's going to want to develop it, or she's going to want to develop it, and that's perfectly fair, because here are the rules we put down for you, and you're following the rules. Well, why can we complain about that? But and then you have community groups who are like outraged, but it's too late, and they might give you like take one balcony away, or take, you know, the air conditioning thing off the roof that you don't like, and that's about all you're going to get. But it seems to me like changes need to be more wholesale, and I think that only is going to be done through some other kind of zoning mechanism. Sorry, I can't be in the same drum on the mobile.
No, but it's a true point that, you know, we don't want to be advocating to break our own laws in the name of self-defense. The zoning laws were put in place following a due process, and where were we then? But here's the thing is that these zoning laws have been in place for a long time, but it just never happened. It never happened. And now all of a sudden the floodgates are open and it's happening everywhere. I mean, it's really stark. Bozeman now versus Bozeman 20 years ago, the amount of activity, the amount of building and development activity, it's you can't even compare. Anything that ever happened in Bozeman prior to 2019, it seems like from a different era. What we're seeing now is really nothing less than an onslaught. And so, yeah, it's difficult because we have all these laws in place. We have all the plans in place. We have the codes and the ordinances, the overlay districts, the historic districts, the neighborhood associations. We have all of this sort of infrastructure for proper community engagement. And yet somehow it doesn't seem to be serving citizens overall. But that's what we're here for, to try to make it better.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, one of the things we're hoping to do in having community dialogue here on KGVM is to create that kind of communication that, you know, there hasn't necessarily been a lot of vehicles for over recent years in Bozeman. Of course, there are periodic in-person gatherings, but it's great to be able to start building these kind of opportunities on air for people to be able to hear about what perspectives are out there in the community and become more strongly connected.
And that's what we're all about here on KGVM Bozeman Local Radio, Paul. As you can tell, we're segueing out, and I just want to take another opportunity to thank you very much for making yourself available to us.
Yes, thanks for joining us.
It was my pleasure, guys. I'm really a big fan of Bozeman, and I'd love to see good things for Bozeman.
And Paul, you know what we're going to do? We're going to save it just for you. We're going to save Bozeman for you.
Excellent. Thank you, Steve.
All right, Paul. Thanks a lot.
Oh, my pleasure, guys.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
So long, Paul.
Bye.
Bye.